Oh,
it's working.
Whoa, did that
we've just been
that sounded like someone was a little bit more excited to get it going than the previous person.
Exactly. Yeah, well, we are on a new season of the Fitness and Youth podcast, and we've obviously returned to a new voice for Zoom, so this is exciting. It's a fresh take on everything.
Maybe it's the online AI version, because I'm not using the app today. Maybe it's a new voice. But she was uppity. She really like wanted us to get this thing going.
Yeah, I mean, that sparked an idea of a future episode of AI in physical education.
Sure.
There's got to be something in that.
Yeah, most importantly, maybe we could ask our listeners to email you and give us an idea as to what angle we should hit it at, because it's numerous angles to hit, you know, as opposed to like, oh, you know, what's it going to do to young kids, you know, playing video games? Or maybe it's artificial intelligence and virtual reality concepts.
Yes,
we've touched that before. So please email Dan.
Please email me.
Yep. If you don't know his email, well, you got to find it.
I'll put it in the show notes, but don't all hammer me. I won't put my mobile. We don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but that would be very interesting.
I think even your email in the notes is going to be enough to slam you with 25. Hey, Dan, we're the best fitness industry podcast, you know, blah, blah, blah. Hit us up.
AI marketing will have picked up the keywords, and I'll be spammed.
That's fine. They'll find you. Remember the old days where we used to put in, we'd send out, this is when we thought like, well, during the Obama years, we had every reason to think so, but in the Bush, into the Bush and before Obama, with security and surveillance and stuff. I don't know if you remember in .com or anything online, we'd put down James space A-T space O-P-E-X.
No.
You don't remember that? We'd write it out so that the surveilling people couldn't pick up what our email was, or the computers couldn't, and then send us out this. Anyways, that was funny. So maybe try that in the show notes to see who's really
going
to do the extra work.
It's the email equivalent of putting on tinfoil hats. but
soon enough, we'll have them on.
We will. I feel like it's coming. But excited to kick off this new season.
Yeah, season number.
I'm calling it season two. We're episode 19, but I'm going to say season two.
Yep.
And we're kicking things off by discussing physical education and aligning it with the principles that are being used in, it's called the Wonder School. And James put me onto this in a podcast that's, it was on the Jordan Peterson podcast with founder, I think his name is Zach Lahn. I want to say you pronounce his last name.
Yeah, thanks for bringing the name in too, because I forgot.
Yeah, but a very, very interesting concept of kind of reimagining traditional schooling. And in today's episode, we're going to be kind of aligning the principles of the Wonder School and kind of how that might be applicable to physical education, and to think about physical education moving forward. So I will link the Jordan Peterson podcast episode in the show notes. So if you want context and a bit more background on, I guess, what the Wonder School is and kind of some of the principles and practices that they're implementing, you can go and have a listen to that as well. But I guess, James, just as a quick summary, what were some of your main takeaways from that episode, just in the way that I guess they've set up and established that school and the way that they facilitate, I guess how you'd say that learner-driven approach, that Socratic-based school system? What were some of the really kind of key takeaways and principles that really kind of hit home for you?
Well, in the end, it's why I sent it over to you too, because I tried to see inside of Zach's concepts and ideas, why this couldn't be done in the physical movement space. You know, that's the deepest interest that I have based upon hearing that story. I also picked up, you know, trying to think back now, because it was at least a month ago for sure where I sent that to you, or maybe even longer. I think it was my my continual pessimism around these reactionary approaches to the traditional school model. You know, so again, you know, I've talked about it on our podcast and numerous other podcasts in regards to the minority. What I mean by the minority is the minority of like good ideas in movement and behavior and nutrition, et cetera, that it almost seems like it can never be placed inside of the traditional model. You know, there's just so many overarching things that kind of not allow that to happen. So that's the other thing I took from it as well. It was, is like this one little highlighting, you know, example in regards to competency in education, or let's call it traditional pieces of education, you know, and I couldn't help but think, to answer your question lengthily, of like, well, how in the hell is that possible? Could number one spread amongst all schools, you know, even a glimmer of it amongst all schools? And secondly, where do we, you know, are we just rehashing our old problems of how do we get this into the physical space? So those are the things that I took from it. How about you?
Yeah, I think, and they quote that Lachlan and the other founders started the school in opposition to that typical American schooling system to, I guess, you know, create the obedient factory worker. And the principles they're using to, from an educational standpoint, I think directly relate to how it would be taught for, you know, physical education or physical expression curriculum, in that I love how it has that focus on that self-driven learning and a drive to love learning, you know, in a physical education capacity. That's learner-driven, is teaching them to love the pursuit of knowledge around how they can optimize their health and how they can learn new tools in order to overcome challenges and obstacles that they are inevitably going to face. And I love how they tied it to narrative. So they tied it to, one of the teachings was they'd start a day with, you know, and they use the hero's journey as an example to kind of set the tone of the day, where they go through, you know, a historical figure who's had to overcome a really challenging and difficult problem, and some of the tools that they drew on to kind of navigate it, to then use that to frame the day of whatever the kids were going to do, or the tasks and challenges that were going to overcome, is to think about, you know, what inspires you? What would you sacrifice for? How can you kind of, what are some of the things that we can be working on to overcome maybe some of the fears that you have, to find that calling and with that ultimate goal, which I kind of love, to, you know, change the world. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, this big audacious dream, but you can see how once a problem is framed from that perspective, and it's leading the kids to autonomy, right? It's leading the kids to have to face these challenges, figure out how to overcome them in a collaborative and team environment, but based off what inspires them and what's really calling to them. And I think when you link that with physical activity and physical expression, mm-hmm. again, it's going to yield that autonomy in kids. So I thought that was just really inspirational in terms of how they're structuring that school.
Yeah, I also thought, you know, the hero journey allows this freedom of religion. You know, it kind of allows everyone in their freedom of belief to still fit inside of that. You know, that's what I did like about the structure. It's almost this is reason why probably Jordan Peterson attached so well to Zach, was the Aristotelian Joseph Campbell mythological concept, right? It's this loose Jungian archetypes, right? Which I kind of like, you know. I think where that may, and I'm sorry to sidewind this, but I never thought about it till now. Do you think that may get them into trouble, the concept, the metaphorical concept that we're talking about here for physical practices only, when you start seeing these different innate needs for males versus females? Is that making sense whatsoever? Because the archetypal mythological hero is, you know, the darker version of that. It's very masculine driven.
That's,
you know,
true.
So I'm trying to think about physical expression for males and females, where you'll get a ton of 8-year-old or 10-year-old boys falling in love with that quote unquote hero concept. But will you get 8- and 10-year-old girls to fall in love with the hero concept? Just trying to think about that in terms of physical stuff, not the sociological or.
No, that's a really good question, because I think you're right. A lot of those classic stories that have stood the test of time, especially when it comes to, you know, putting in the frame of physicality and physical expression, are very masculine in nature. And so how do you, you know, are you going to speak to young feminine women in the same way? And I think that would be a really interesting kind of thing to go in and look at, like in the schooling system as well. What are some of, because a lot of, I guess the projects within the Wonder School are self-directed, like they're choosing, they kind of have a loose framework, but ultimately they're choosing, I guess, the subject matter and kind of the projects that they take on through that natural selection. What would it look like from, you know, a male, not versus female, but in relation to a female, where are they naturally selecting to go down? I think that would just be an interesting kind of insight to see, you know, from an education or traditional education standpoint versus a physical education standpoint. Because I think there are still avenues, or there's still areas within physical expression that you'll naturally see, obviously, a masculine male move towards and a feminine female. And I don't want to put them into buckets right now, but I think by natural selection, it's definitely going
to
happen.
Well, when the system is stressed, I mean, this is, we don't have to clear our throat to these obvious things, right? Just go and see who's lined up out of 1,000 artistic gymnastics and cheerleaders, right? Who is it? Okay, you, whatever you want to call those people, they're not males, you know? Who's lined up to punch things, to break glass, and to like wrestle? Okay, line up 1,000 of them. 992 of them are males. Do you see what I'm saying? So I just tried to say, is this something that we need to think about if you and I are going to participate in this metaphorical like fix for the Socratic method inside of physical performance? I think the hero's journey is an excellent, you know, unreligious way of belief right from the get-go. But I was just sensing that we may fall into these issues around these masculine, feminine kind of drives. And that's why I just landed on, like, you know, maybe quote unquote, the hero journey needs to sound slightly different when you're phrasing it for that female, right? Because maybe they want to do physical expression through artistic group sessions and creativity,
right? Yeah, something so that
said,
kind of,
if I said artistic group and creativity, I can tell you a lot of 11-year-old boys are not pumped about those three words.
Yeah. And I think, like how we would talk about, I guess, going through a demarcation of age groups and what would go inside a physical expression curriculum, you know, early on, it's just trying to expose them to as many different challenges inside of their, you know, obviously inside their scope of practice and their ability. But again, creating those choices, and the words that are coming into my mind are, you know, I don't want to say performance, but let's say like output, like you're really trying to test yourself, like you're like, how much output can you have relative to, you know, your cohort or those above you? So let's say performance. The second would be discovery. It's just literally a discovery of your limit, physical limit, and trying to push that and test it. And then the third bucket could be performance or creativity, sorry. So that would be, you know, like the gymnastics, the something that is like an expression of creativity, dance. And I think that would be a cool way to see how people would then naturally select. Because if you wanted to kind of like, you know, in a sporting context, test yourself and compete, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who chooses that? Who's just really, you know, more innate and curious about, like, I just want to test my physical limits and see what I'm capable of, just kind of like doing my thing. And yeah, I'll kind of have those Socratic discussions and see what other people are doing and the tools that they're using, because that might help me on my path. And then who are those that just want to use physicality as a creative outlet to just, you know, create something that they feel is beautiful and expressive and might bring joy to others. So those, that kind of just frame came into my mind of how that might be a fun way to see how kids naturally sorted themselves out.
Yeah, I like that, because I was thinking, yeah, the boy will create his own punching program and the female will create their own group dance thing. You know, I'm just being reductionist on those concepts, but I agree with you. I think the middle word in all of it through that may not be the wording of hero's journey. Maybe it's a creation, right? You're going to create the pathway. And it's not necessarily a quote unquote, a hero journey. So I guess that's one thing we could say that we've added to that transition from the Wonder School over to what our metaphorical idea would be for physical creation of the Wonder School. Right. And we should come up with a fancy term that involves wonder and physicality and like combine them. And it can't just be Wonderland. Okay. I think that's what we've offered, is that we change the wording maybe, right? Because we want to involve everyone on that creative process. The other thing that I thought about as you were mentioning it is the old darker corner of what, you know, you and I have gotten into with the implementation of this. And I'm not jumping ahead to implementation or practicality, but is the subjectivity in nature of what we're talking about here. So if people are listening in, they're like, oh man, like, where are the days where you're just going to, like, my daughter just started PE. And they're going to be timed on a mile run once a week, right? And Chloe and I talk philosophically about that. But so you got to say, well, you know, I could hear people listening in going, well, where's your standards? Like, how are you going to test? And you need to go back to our previous episodes for us to give you an idea as to what, you know, the importance is inside of physical activity. Is not based upon the old archaic model of traditional schools. It's about creativity. And like you said, which I wrote down, understanding the three areas, I put them in different words, slightly similar to yours. Understanding developmental biology, right? Understanding where you are, right? Are you 8? Are you 14? Like, what's going on? Number two, understanding progression, like true progression, right? Like, will you progress when you're 72? Like, you're going to talk to 13-year-olds about this, right? So they have to understand the whole thing of what we talk about for progression. And limitations through challenges, right? That's the wording that you used on, you know, this concept of getting tripped up and then figuring out, oh, wow, I can't do that. Yeah, exactly. Right. So indirectly, I'm just going off your wording for it. But what I wrote down to your second question for today, Daniel, was what are the principles that we can derive from this that we can add to our PE concept? I wrote down to seek self-evident truths in physical activity. Right. That's the main thing we're going to offer everyone, is that regardless of your capability, one thing you will not leave this course with saying is that you didn't figure out what your limitations were and how to challenge yourself to continue to kind of rise up and improve, and recognize too that at the end of the day, when you're 49, like James Fitzgerald, you are going to reach limitations, you know, so you're going to learn that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great way to frame it, because it gives you a kind of beacon to start to work towards. And then, you know, if you go back to those kind of three different self-selecting categories, the fun part is that ultimately when you hit a roadblock, you're probably going to draw on some of the lessons from the discovery, you know, group and the creative group to help navigate some of those finer, more specific problems that you come in, that you will inevitably run into. And again, just being able to draw on, you know, and see the beauty in, you know, if you're someone who's really hell bent on just like competing and winning and you have that competitive mindset, how do you learn from someone who's just really like learned to discover and push their own edge and some of the subtleties that that they've had to kind of encounter versus someone who's, you know, very performative and had to really refine every little minute detail down to a sequence. And, you know, like you can see how all those areas communicate to help one another moving forward. And ideally at that point, it's so ingrained and embedded that they have those values and the behavior is reflecting of that, that they are now on a journey that physical expression and practice is just as ingrained as brushing their teeth and having breakfast and, you know, going through the normal rhythm and flow of a day.
Yeah. Cause remember too, these are, I believe Wonder School is only working right now up to middle school.
Mm.
Right. So this is an important, and I hope no one is not like listening in who's keenly interested, who's like, oh, of course, you know, they're not working with, you know, but this is the reason why, just on your point, right? They want to like set the seeds in place, right? For this base support so that when you get to grade 8, 9, 10, 11, you have all those things in place, you know? So that's another thing I guess I indirectly pulled from it, would be hope that with that kind of physical, you know, improvement through these Socratic methods, let's say, carried over to physicality, I would hope that, you know, kids are writing their own programs. And now that I'm saying that out loud, Daniel, if that happens at younger ages, I really do think that there wouldn't actually even necessarily be any education needed in grade 9, 10, 11, and 12 for physical expression.
Yeah, we just think about that continuation.
Yeah, if you have the base support built, right, for patterns and pacing, you know, for 8 years, kindergarten to grade 8, I mean, what are you learning? You know, because if you're like, oh, well, you're going to be learning about actin and myosin. No, you learn about that in biology class, not in physical expression. You see that? So, you know, it just makes me think about the, again, that hope that I have in the future where kids are learning to take care of themselves physically and nutritionally throughout their schooling process. And
yeah, I think it's like more
tertiary, you know, that was another thing I pulled from that episode.
Yeah. It's a dream state, but a beacon to strive towards is yes. Like you said, they have that foundation set by ninth grade and they're allotted time to now experiment and explore with, I guess, the things they're learning in biology.
Yeah.
The things they're learning in, it's not home economics anymore, but nope. Basically they're playing around, you know, it's like, okay, young boy wants to learn, oh, he's really into bodybuilding or hypertrophy style training. And he's playing around with, you know, the ABCs of the training that he's doing, how those recovery principles that he's learning, you know, through biology, through nutrition, how all of these things are helping him to like build. And then similarly, you know, someone else who's doing something that say is more subjective, like they're a diver or they're a, you know, rhythmic gymnast, you know, how do they have to navigate the ins and outs of that physical expression where it's not necessarily based on physical output. It's based on someone else's perception of that and tying all those pieces in and being able to explore for themselves what works, what doesn't. Because again, if you can come out of school with that, you are just... Well, you said.
Yeah. Well, I thought about that too, of in two lanes. Number one, you know, out of the, you know, I don't even know what the number is, the millions of students that graduate in America, how many of them in percentage wise have actually gone through this like Wonder style education? That's why I kind of get ho-hum about that, right? And then I parallel it to, well, then how many of them in current percentage today don't rely on society for their knowledge of physical expression and nutrition. And I think the number is probably even lower. It's probably even lower. So if you're like, oh, there's, you know, let's use it. There's 7% of all grade 12 students who graduate, you know, competence wise through, we'll just pick STEM or STEAM now, I guess it's called, through STEAM. I think they're, you know, ready to rock and roll. To your point you just made on the world is ready, right? And I'd say the number is less than 1%. of who finished grade 12 who could know how to make a meal, know why to choose real food, know how to alternate resistance one day, aerobic work the next day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's less than 1%. And I was just picking on that based upon our dream or utopia concept of carrying this over.
Yeah. And I guess I want to touch on some of those, I guess, roadblocks that, you know, if you are a school like Wonder or, you know, what we're envisioning, we're inevitably going to come head to head with, you know, let's say policymakers here that will want objective measurements to be able and normative data to be able to show, well, you know, how are we showcasing success? How do we know that this works? And I really think it's going to be a really tough area for education, especially as more and more people I feel are going to want to revolutionize, you know, education, not just from a physical expression side of things, but just traditional education as well. Because they made mention of it in the podcast that they haven't quite figured that component out when it comes to, I guess, standardized testing and kind of, you know, in the US, how you would then, you know, use a score to then get into, you know, get an internship to then move on into a career setting. Let's say as an example. And it's something that I kind of think about a lot and haven't, you know, and James, I know you do, but we haven't really come up with an answer unless it's just that it gets eradicated, which is like people, yeah, no. How can you eradicate any sort of, you know, testing or objective measurements so that we can kind of grade and assess. But I'm just trying to brainstorm in this setting, it almost has to be completely removed.
Totally. Yeah, we've mentioned it numerous times before. We used words like deconstruction. We used words like, you know, abolish, you know, common terminology used today. But that's the only way through, I really do think, because, but let's start on it on a, let's like a higher view of it. I think it has to start through language and just thoughts and philosophical questioning first. It has to start through that. With what we're doing, right? That's our project. It's come up with ideas, say things out loud. Maybe it'll go out there somewhere and things will change. Maybe there'll be the parent out there listening in who looks at their kid in school right now and goes, yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. There's no way in heck that's going to change for the next 7 years. So what does that parent do? This is my point on, you know, the positivity of just saying those things and how to change it from top down. Is that parent then goes and maybe in 3 or 4 years, besides just the 3 or 4 years they dedicated to teaching their kids about taking care of themselves, maybe they get on the school board. You know, maybe they're a community coach. Maybe they start doing stuff that like moves what you and I thought of as the language and the thoughts, and they move it into their home and there into their community and to their schools. So maybe that's a long way of answering what you posited there is a question. You know, change, I think it's going to take a really, really long period of time, and not a revolutionary sense. It's not going to be like a whole deconstruction, et cetera. But the one dirty thing though, Daniel, that we have on our side that we don't talk about a lot, but it is on our side, is that kids and humans are not getting healthier. That's the one thing they have. So maybe in 20 years, someone will finally come knocking on your and my door and being like, gosh, you know, we really got a problem. What's your suggestions? And we're like, we've been saying this since the mid-90s, right? We've been saying this since the mid-90s. We probably should get into consistency. But I'll you know, where I see, again, an issue is honestly because of the American system. And maybe this is just from where my brain has been for the past number of years on my journey to become an American citizen. But the greatest thing I believe about this country that I'm hugely attractive to is the freedoms and the liberties that we have. Right now, a lot of people may think you don't have it. Just sit and breathe 10 times and then ask that question again. We got a ton of them. But inside of that, that's where I also see us being at fault in never creating change. for what we see happening in health. Because everyone is being born now with 9 out of 10 people to parents who in their own right are saying, listen, I want to eat what I want and do what I want. You know, that's sad, but hey, that's America. So what's the other option, Daniel? Honestly, Robbie Guston and I talk about this in fitness and philosophy all the time. It becomes, we need to come up with this authoritarian concept of OPEC's North Korea, where it's like, well, what's the fix? Well, you tell everyone you're going to run a freaking mile and try to do pull-ups every day. And no, you can't have Doritos. You're going to eat broccoli. Do you see that? So inside of that is a really darkness of authoritarian where people are like, but I want to eat Doritos and not do anything. Okay, great. Great, all the power to you. And so if anyone out there is listening is like, oh, that's not strong enough to make that happen for the future, it's happening right now. It's happening right now. So, sorry, yeah, I hope that tied into what we were discussing, but that's what I see is one of the biggest issues with the implementation is the freedoms in place for it of us, this right in front of us, right? Let's call it a health crisis, right? I'll use terms that New York Times writes about, right? Health crisis, right? But what are you going to do about it? You're going to keep leaning into freedoms and liberties, or are you going to say, no, we're going to tax sugar and your Doritos bag of chips is $9 now. It's not 64 cents. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really such a tricky problem to try to unpack, because I totally agree. It's the people aren't making the choices that are moving them, or we're not making the choices as a society to move or empower people to be more healthy. No. And it certainly doesn't seem like people are making those choices as well. And I think that kind of comes back to, again, cultivating a love of learning, but using, and let's go back to the hero's journey, but using the examples, which it's, you know, and how they frame it is that you have to go out into, let's say, the world where it is unknown, where you're going to encounter challenges, stressful environments, like bad things are probably going to happen, but through that, you'll learn the tools to overcome the problem, grow, develop, and move forward. And by doing that, you become the role model that empowers those within your, let's say, sphere of influence to do the same. And I think that's what we've moved away from, you know, whether it's through that, you know, really just owning that freedoms, those freedoms and liberties, which are great. But ultimately, then, if you don't have accountability to seek out those challenges and to face things that, and I think it's part and parcel, that things that inspire you and things that motivate you are equally things that you're afraid of, because they're, you know, it's looking up the mountain and seeing that place that you'd love to reach, but the journey is going to be treacherous and challenging. And most certainly you're going to have to step out of your comfort zone in order to attain that goal. And I think now it's just, there's not that, let's say, innate sense of curiosity or drive to learn. And then, especially over time, if it's, you haven't developed that hunger to put yourself in front of challenging situations, you know, not dangerous situations by any means, but things that are going to test you, by definition, that's just going to anchor you to the same point. And once you're out of that growth phase, you know, like you go over the hill and start to decline, and that just accelerates that rate of atrophy in every sense of the word. And so it's kind of the other side of the coin of the freedoms and liberties, is that it's great and it's phenomenal, but it has a dark side as well if you're not cognizant or aware of it or accountable to it.
Yeah. Especially in the physical domain, because I classify movement and Doritos in the physical domain, right? But I would agree with you that there's probably been a bigger push and also more improvements in the cognitive domain. I would argue that, and this is, like you said, based upon the obedient factory worker, big picture concept driven down into schools, right? But where has that got us, right? We're fat and lazy. And yet, and still we scream freedom, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you that, you know, I appreciate you trying to come up with words that try to, like, you know, find the middle inside of there as to what this language is that we can come up with. And I would agree with you. Yeah. Learning by all means. Right. Like, but then I keep saying, yeah, why isn't learning done the way Zach does with this Wonder School in place for physical expression in schools? Right. You and I are like, yeah, yeah. Learning, physical expression, young schools like Zach and the Wonder School. What's the you know, I just stop. I was like, I'm just laughing. It's like I'm writing a 1984 by George Orwell back in the 60s or whatever, right? He's probably humorously writing these things, right? And he could see it happening, and 60 years later, right? It's like it's coming true, but he was giggling at it before it even came true. So this is where my giggles come from, is like, what's the chances of that happening besides just in this Wonder School? And I just really don't see, I see just so many, to use your term and your question, of roadblocks. I just see so many roadblocks in place. And I'll continue saying it. I'll say it 1,000 times, you know, and maybe if I keep complaining and keep saying that there's so many roadblocks in relation to little openings, you know, where the light shines through, you know, maybe we'll come to a consensus as to what's the number one thing that you and I and everyone needs to come up with to really tip this over, to really tip it over, you know, because I think where you and I don't jump into a lot, which we may want to, like maybe another thing you can write down in your list for the future, is a conversation on public physical expression. So not school physical expression, right? What's happening in the public? So outside of the school, what is physical expression expected in quote unquote society, not in education? Because you and I, would you agree, Daniel? You and I use the lens of looking in the school a lot. Would you agree?
I would agree, yeah.
Yeah, so that's maybe where we need to go, you know, in the future, is to kind of go in that realm and then say, well, what does that look like? You know, and the reason why I just make mention of that is because I just see so many roadblocks inside of the traditional concept of education that we are, of course, using, you know, Zach's, you know, reactionary approach, right, to the traditional model. And you and I are going, oh, maybe, you know, for physicality. And I don't know. I love doing it. Obviously, you know, I wouldn't be doing this with you if I didn't love doing it, coming up with the concepts and the ideas. But I just keep falling into, like, what's the chances of that actually getting into a school where there's this subjective element of physical expression, you know, what do we want to call it? Intentions, right? Where, you know, kids are coming to school and, you know, at the end of the day, again, to rehash what you and I came up with, you know, this 90 minutes physical expression. And the one thing that they learned that day, this is the 8-year-old, right? They tell their parents, and their parents are like, oh, geez, you know, my kid's smarter than I am. Yes. Is like, you know what Coach Daniel told me today, you know, was that you want to be slightly better and try to challenge yourself each time you come back. Right? See how simple that sounds? But that is like, that is life changing for that young person, right? As an 8-year-old to be told, oh, that's it. I'm just going to try to progress and make these challenges more difficult the next time. Right. Boom. Like it just sets off this, like, you know, so many years of a, let's call it a hero's journey, right? A journey of like, wow, you know, I remember, man, when I was 8, you know, and he's 14 now. And he's saying, I remember when I was 8, you know, I couldn't even climb the climb board. Right. And now I'm doing 30 strict pull-ups. You know, like, yeah. This is the story. That's the hero's journey story. that we want, that we, you know, we come up with in books and we write these ideas, they're fantasies, but that's what we want to, that's what we want to have in place.
Yeah. And I, you know, using the rock wall as an example, that's what it would look like. It would look like, you know, a lot of time where, you know, a young child is at a rock wall and he's climbing and he gets to the same spot, you know, for weeks, you know, he finishes the day, dusts off the chalk. He's a little bit frustrated, goes home, you know, like, but he's so hell bent on trying to crack this, you know, he's reading, he's digesting information that might help. He comes back in the next day, you know, harnesses up, chalks up, and then goes for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the great things that they were saying, they try to have minimal intervention, like teacher intervention. Obviously they're there to guide sessions and to make sure that everyone's kind of staying on course, but there's very minimal intervention from the actual teachers, which I love, because it's kind of letting them fail forward. It's letting them make mistakes, learn from them, unpack them. What went wrong? What went well? What went well? Put it back together, have another crack. And I think that that's kind of such a visual aid of how it's like, just let them go. Let them figure it out. Let them fail. Let them kind of kick the dirt and, you know, punch the ground a little bit and, you know, maybe intervene and like, hey, this is something we can think about, you know, give them a little nudge or two here, a little cue, and give them a little resource that might help them. And then they come back like ready to go the next day.
Yeah. You're making me think about how, again, it would be different from the gym, the gymnasium, to the classroom in Zach's model, right? Because what you just spoken about there in Zach's model of not necessarily just the Socratic methods that are used, right? Or the like, start the day with this and et cetera. Those are still like one instructor to 20 kids. Do you know what I'm saying? Where you get these little individual opportunities, like the quote unquote speak up and when you're 13, have your first argument debate on justice, right? And it's now like coming into your mind, you know, one thing that I thought about for when Zach was explaining things and why I love that he was getting at the basics for these young kids is that in physicality, to tie this into the physical arena, where physical is different is that it's going to be this, like you just said, like these little nudges where there's almost like someone looking out over 70 kids, just like doing physical challenges, and you see something happening, right? You see the kid fall after four times trying something and you're like, man, just come back tomorrow and you'll get it. You see, that's all it took was like a 10 second thing from the thing, but that is different in the classroom, right? And the thing I liked about Zach's that you and I should try to think about and carry over into physical challenges is that Zach said it this way, but it wasn't these exact words. You know, when the kid is 9, we don't teach them quantum physics, right? And we don't teach them algebra. And we don't teach them, you know, deep multiplication and division. But we make them master 2 + 2 = 4. Right? That was such powerful words that I was like, how can we do that in physicality? Do you know what I'm saying? And the way that you and I have talked about it, just to maybe we do need to figure this out, but to carry that over into the physical realm is back to our language where quantum physics is like the, I don't know, is like clean and jerking 200 kilos. Okay. So some young boy is like, oh my gosh, it's like, that's quantum physics. Okay. Like, and then like front squatting 100 kilos, that's like algebra. You see, so you want the kid to understand that, because Zach could teach that 12-year-old young female, be like, yeah, see quantum physics here? And she's like, and he's like, deep algebra. And she's like, But then she starts to play with multiplication. She's like, ooh, I kind of, so you can see where she is, right? Developmentally. Back to my whole point there. That's a little bit more individualized in the cognitive realm in the class. Physically, it may be another challenge that we have in place here. But I'm just going back to maybe, Daniel, I'm forgetting that what you and I have rehashed already. You and I said, and we agreed that we would come up with the environment that allowed young kids to figure out those challenges for themselves, right? See, that's the difference. Whereas in the Socratic method in the classroom for a 10-year-old, you know what I'm saying? There's like there's voice, there's argument, there's like one-on-one, right? that's not happening out in the 90-minute gymnasium session, you know? So I'm just saying that out loud to show the differences in the physicality realm of the challenge we have in front of us versus the cognitive realm and the competencies that are inside of Zach's idea.
Yeah, and it seems from coming up with that environment where it's both collaborative and group-based physical challenges and expression, yeah, but then individual as well, because you need to find a good blend of the two. Because based on what I get, I think based on what I'm saying, it seems very like individual. Yes. And whilst it's an individual journey, that's not life. You are collaborating, yes, and working with groups and communities and tribes. So both knowing how to do that based on a group project or goal or challenge, but then pulling yourself out individually, you know, how do I work on those characteristics individually that both help move me forward, but then when I'm plugged into a group setting can add value and help move the group or the tribe forward as well. And I think that would have to be inside of that model as well.
Yeah. And a way to do that, you know, maybe something we haven't thought about, but there would have to be collaboration, you know, where the inside of Zach's, you know, 11-year-olds, you know, that are talking about justice for the first time, you know, as they're finishing the session, the instructor in that class is saying, now think about what are the differences and the similarities as you go and challenge yourself physically now. Do you see that there has to be a collaborative method here. So we're not just going to go like pseudo dualistic properties, right? It's like, oh, the body's the body, the mind's the mind, and we'll just, you know, it's not going to be together. You know, the person who is taught those Socratic arguments are saying, now, as you go out there, right, think about, you know, how you're thinking about your strategy for progression. You know, think about your emotions that come up when you do fail. You know, think about what you're going to create as your next kind of challenge. Do you know what I'm saying? So they just finished like an exhausting 45 minutes of debate on justice for the first time. And now, again, that kid is going to say, well, how do I carry those principles in collaborative efforts over to the body when I go out there? So that's something that I also wanted to include as a, you know, part of the list that we should have for anyone who's listening in that wants to take this and put it in place. It has to be collaborative. It can't be this siloed, you know, idea of like, oh, the physicality stuff is just like for you guys to release tension so you can come back here and think better. No.
Yeah. And then connecting it to, again, that story that inspires them and helps them kind of make sense of why they're doing what they're doing and what part of that really speaks to their calling. And I think that would be a cool challenge is to, I guess, the hero's journey, what that would look like from a physical expression standpoint that isn't in the sporting world. Let's say, what's a hero's journey that is from both an individual who's an individual, you know, case study that you could use that isn't sport, and a group case study that isn't sport. Like, just racking my brain for something that would immediately pop to mind. Like, I'm drawing blanks, like non-sporting related. Like, it's pretty hard. A child would be like, wow, that's super cool. And that's, I get it. You know, like I'm reading this 10 times, you know, like,
oh, listen, I'm down with you. Cause you know, who does my daughters get to come into their school, right? Policemen, special forces, you know, it's like, oh, hero, you know? But I think when I think about that is the unfortunate consequences of us doing that, right? To your point, or what you just realized, right, is it's almost it's almost impossible. And I would say maybe we need to rethink the terminology and the naming again, as opposed to hero, because yeah, I don't want to use LeBron James. You know, I don't want to use some narcissistic, you know, anyways, I just don't want that. So yeah, it's going to be very difficult for, just want to think about it, a bunch of 12-year-olds to have just a dad, right? A dad come in. Whose dad is this? Well, that's Tommy's dad. You know, he's like, well, what can you do? Right. I don't know. I had four kids. I've been working at this job for 20 years and we've come up with this security defense mechanism, you know, to improve this in technology. You know, I lift weights, look, I can stand on my hands, right? Like, you know, but to your point, that's the hero. Do you see that?
Yeah, it's just not a
reality. So
there's nothing sexy about that. Where it's like,
gosh, no.
They're not on social media. They don't have a million followers. They're not, like, you know, doing TikTok reels. And
if I went to my daughter's school, my daughters would be like, dad, tell them about CrossFit, right? And I'd be like, why don't I just tell them like I went for a 2-hour hike the other day? Right? Like, but that's not, you know, and you can just think about their brains, right? That's not exciting, dad. You know, you're not a hero, but I am, right? Because I'm consistent. Do you see that? So it's, yeah, that's, I get into the area of the unsexiness again, on top of the quote unquote hero or hero-esque. I'm not even sure what the feminized version is of the Harris or hero-esque or whatever. Yeah. But that's why we need to like just make it vanilla and just say each individual's physical challenges, right? You're just going to have to challenge yourself to be better every day and to find out your limitations and to figure out what you're going to do when you come up against those limitations. Right. Yeah. Because we don't even make the first steps with kids today. Right. We don't even want to make the first steps because of all this like victimology shit and social shit. And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I don't think we should ask kids to try to do pull-ups because some kids may be embarrassed. Are we really there? That this is where we are, right? It's like some kids may feel bad. Oh my gosh. So again, but inside of my anguish there is, you know, another example of a monstrosity of a roadblock that we're up against is people's perceptions of being okay with just physical challenges for the sake of it. Right. And again, I just thought about, as you were mentioning it, a reactionary thing to this is that there are, I know in Hillsdale College, for example, they have philosophy classes in the weight room. Not all their classes, but just think about that. That's an adult style reaction, right? A reaction to going back to the old Aristotelian Platonic concepts, right? Of like challenging the mind and then the collaborative carryover to the body, right? And then someone doing 225 on bench and then another person going, oh, why can't I do that? And a lot of people think there's nothing inside of that. There's so much inside of that. That's positive. Just to finish on like an adult version note of the end result that we'd like to have, is we want people striving to challenge their brains for learning, but also learning how to be creative physically over time. That's the pinnacle.
Yeah. And it's a challenge, I guess, in say cognitive space, like in the classroom. You know, everything's hierarchical and we're always looking at how we compare against somebody else. But in a school setting, a lot of that is more anonymous. You know, you sit a test, you're not necessarily going to be able to have visibility of everyone's test score, so you're not necessarily immediately being like, quote unquote, judged.
Yeah.
Whereas in physical expression, you know, you're all around, you can clearly see, you know, who can do something and who can't. Yep. And maybe that instills that lack of confidence or fear, and they're less inclined to now, I guess, risk exposing their weaknesses or perceived limitations. And that would be a really interesting exploration of creating an environment free from, or where you would liberate young people to go and, or I guess not disregard it, but turn down the volume of what others will perceive of me that enables me to go out and, you know, risk failing and do something that challenges me. Cause I was just thinking like, yeah, in a classroom, it's a lot more anonymous. You can kind of hide behind, you know, there's you're not going to see what everyone does results based unless you're sharing with your friends. But when you're competing in sport or whether you're doing a physical activity class and, you know, the task is, you know, who can run the fastest, it's not, you can't hide, you know.
Yeah,
you can clearly see there's a winner and a loser.
Yeah, there's a huge argument actually and debate currently out there today for what you're speaking about in the educational realm. Not a generalized thing, but there are some corners where people are really questioning that. Now, if you just go back no more than 25 years, I remember having our educational scores actually front and center placed up on the doorway of the results of our testing. You know, so a specific kinesiology class I had in what, 95, I remember the professor putting up a C, you know, a James Fitzgerald right there, 9254160, Memorial University of Newfoundland. I still remember my student number, a C, right? And I was, you know, front and center. So again, this comes back to your point there of how do we get the policymakers, the pros, the parents, and what was our fourth P?
The peers.
Peers. How do we get everyone okay with the fact, right, that in a classroom, Lisa is going to fail horribly at climbing the rope, right? And everyone though there is not going to just, you know, do the old platitudes of like, oh, next time, Lisa, which is fake, right? Which is fake, right? We all have to learn how to deal with that. All of us need to learn how to deal with that, to your point. So it's higher order, right, than just the judgment, right? Where Janice steps up and Janice is like, no legs, right? And she's like prancing as she walks off, you know? You know, and of course on phone, on video, so she can TikTok it, et cetera. That is where we are today. So how to work that back, I agree with you, so that it becomes similar to the class where your scores are on the board, right? And that's just, and again, I think of those things as truths. You either tried your hardest and you know it deep down that your C was the best you could get. And indirectly, even if you poll all those kids, they're okay with it because they're like, listen, I just tried my best. I don't know and I can't learn some of those concepts. Great. That's your limitation. But what does that student do? Like, what did I do? I went to the professor and said, how do I get better? How do I get, like, how do I learn those things? Because I don't know it. You know, and luckily he helped me. He was like, you're not connected. You're thinking of this as your premise before you get to here. And it was just like, you know, an aha moment. So how can we do that in a physical session? Like I said, of the girl failing the rope climb, and everyone in there is like, yeah, yeah, right. Well, she's going to, you know, Johnny, who's standing over there, right, is like, I know exactly what she needs to do, right? He knows she needs to, like, you know, improve her grip. And how did Johnny come up with that? He was taught that in the physical expression realm, right? So yeah, he knows how her to improve. And then she leaves with this self-evident truth. I cannot climb a rope. That's a truth. Now, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, to your point, Daniel, that you weren't made fun of? And no one cares. No one cares. So what are you going to do? Right? You're going to want to improve. Don't you think? Would you think people would want to, like, get better if you realize, wow, no one gives a shit.
Yeah. I think that comes back to that creating that love of learning. And
yes,
I think that self-driven learning style would really aid there, because you come into an environment that gives you, I guess, freedom to kind of direct where you want to take your physical expression, you know, class or curriculum. And you're probably going to choose, you know, if you use the, like, performance bucket, discovery bucket, and, you know, creative bucket, you're probably going to choose something that you've been exposed to previously that you thought you were good at, that you had tried and you're like, wow, I'm pretty good at this. And then you go in. So therefore you're not kind of judging yourself immediately against everyone. You're doing something that you've probably, you know, and if you've attached it to, let's say, a narrative, or you've attached it to kind of like something that really inspires you, you probably have the desire to learn embedded because it's something that interests you. You probably have a level of confidence already established because you've probably played around with it, you know, in your room or by yourself. And you're not, you know, the guy, you know, the kid who's in the performance bucket who's just literally trying to, you know, punch something as hard as he can, doesn't really care what you're doing. And he's not like, oh, I'm better than you. It's like, I'm doing something completely different. So at least it gives them, you know, we're not stopping them from failing, but at least we can kind of set them up for success where they're selecting to enter into an environment that they are curious about, they're interested in, they want to learn more, and they have a level of confidence. And then obviously as they progress through their development and progress through school, now it's more like, okay, now take the boxing kid out, now you're going to dance. Take the dancer out, now you're going to do this. And we're going to, I see that as a really nice way forward, and just to mitigate that. But again, I think it's silly to think that you're going to mitigate, or you should mitigate, the fact that you're going to judge yourself based off of somebody else. It's how you're hardwired. And I think it's just something that you have to, that's your journey as well. And like you said, like you're going to come up to something that you're not going to be able to do it, and somebody else will. And it's the mindset that love of learning that then determines the road you take. Do you now completely shut down your exposure to doing that thing forever? Or do you go, actually, I'd love to just kind of knock this on the head and dig a little bit deeper, but that's going to take effort.
Yeah.
You're going to have to risk failing more, and it's going to be hard.
Yeah. You're highlighting the differences as to what would take place in a classroom versus the gym, right? Because in the classroom, you know, as an example, they have a debate, right? And then some 12-year-old has a debate, and then they get emotional, right? But inside the class, you know, everyone, whatever their version is of going out to have beers after, they go out and have waters or sodas or whatever after. Do you know what I'm saying? But the teacher creates that environment, right? So that person who was debating that got emotional, right? There's 19 other people in the room who are like, hey, you know, you got emotional there. And they're like, yeah, you know, I got emotional. And then they have some conversation on it. So why did you get emotional? Oh, it's because this is personal to me. Oh, tell me a little bit more. So now there's this empathy that's created in terms of like the argument itself, right? Now, transfer over to the gym, right? Again, what you're highlighting there, I find super important that we want to spend like a double click on over and over, is that we got to see how do we sow the seeds to get that environment to happen in the physical expression realm? How do we do that? That's what we have to keep coming up with, Daniel. Those are the kind of questions that we need to keep asking, right? So how do we get a parent listening in? You know, because I think of when I was teaching, I taught this program called Fit Kids. This was back in 99, 2000, 2001. I could have spent a lot more time. It was just based on what I knew at the time, but we would have elements of a discussion after someone did something and failed, and then other people saying an opportunity to like pitch in and say, because I would say, what do you think, you know, Elizabeth could have done better to do that movement, right? Or do that movement more efficiently. And some kids would of course be afraid to say anything, right? Because they didn't want to hurt Elizabeth's feelings, but some would be like, I think maybe she should have used a different weight or something, you know? So you see, it's actually philosophy going on inside of the physical movement area. So I'm just recounting what I went through and what I think, you know, we had the seeds of it in place, but it didn't carry into the schools and it didn't carry over into public programs, you know, where young kids were getting together, learning about physical expression. and then learning about how to deal with someone being emotional because they couldn't climb the rope. I think we just need a lot more young kids having those opportunities and adults being there to supervise that conversation on the failures and the progression and limitations and truths, you know, and then share some sodas after, you know, or sparkling water, whatever the newest cool version is.
Yeah, because it certainly seems that a beacon of any education system would be to try to take the boogeyman out of failure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that seems like the biggest...
That's what I
was saying.
I believe that's more out of the classroom than it is in the physical realm.
But would you say that we're moving even further away from that now? Oh, like
totally.
Because the biggest hindrance to learning and growing is, I guess, that curiosity to want to dive into the unknown and to face that boogeyman. Oh. And it's like it runs so counterintuitive to
is
happening now.
You know, so yes, I say cognitive and physical. Yeah, it's just like this today. You know, it's like, but there's still a massive separation, is what I'm saying. Inside of that, even the acceptance for fear of failure, I would agree, inside the cognitive classroom, it's been hampered, dude. In the physical realm, I mean, it's almost zero. It's pretty much zero.
It's an interesting, like, just
and the proof in that. Not to keep going on, the proof in that is, sorry to interrupt, is that it's even being pulled out of sport for young people.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's
arguably
you know,
the most
like,
black and white arena that you learn to deal with it.
Dude, right? And it's such a truth, right? You're not good enough. You didn't make it. You missed it, right? Such a truth. But we're creating all these like excuses and justifications now for that young person now in sport. That's a sign that it's really moving away.
Well, in our version of the Socratic school, I think that would be a fantastic part of the curriculum where you know, you're obviously working on projects and you're obviously working on tools to progress, but then it's a reflective session on like, we're all going to stand up and talk about like, you have to use the, you know, let's use the word like, where did we fall short?
Exactly.
Where did we trip up?
Exactly.
Let's own it and let's take the boogeyman out of this because we're not going to, you know, we're not eradicating failure. We're never going to do that. But
dude,
we can be braver. I think that was the expression around. I mean, I think it's around phobias. But you're never gonna silence a fear of something. But you can learn to be braver.
Oh yeah.
When you encounter those situations, and I think that's a very similar principle that it certainly feels not being in a school system, but you know, we're moving away, like we're not teaching kids how to deal with that and so therefore like they're not going to put themselves in harm's way, and then when inevitably I think that's the biggest thing, it's like, well, we're not preparing them for the real life because that's not real life when something inevitably happens. And that goes back to, I think it was said in the podcast, he said, whenever I ask a parent, you know, what is it that you would wish for your child, you know, when they leave the house at 18? And he said, you know, it's not some academic score. It's not some, you know, it's that they have agency and autonomy. Like that was his, you know, most parents articulated that as their wish for a child.
Yep.
And the same goes in physical expression. It's like, if we're not taking the boogeyman away from failure and we're not exposing them to things that they are going to fail at, you know, when they're out of the nest, that's going to happen, you know, maybe daily, weekly.
Yeah.
And not having the agency and tools to navigate it, how do you think that's going to end?
Yeah. Yeah, I got to give it to you. That was you're reminding me of the inspiration that I did feel. Couldn't you feel it in his voice? It was very like,
yeah,
very inspirational, right? Like high energy. We're gonna do this. You know, he's using his own like meta version of it, right? Like his own beliefs. You could sense it from him. So I got to give that to him. I fed off that. It led to me recommending it to you for us to use as a base support for the concept of physical expression. So there is something in there in terms of his commitment that's moving outside of the podcast with JP, right? That we're picking up on And maybe what that is the energy that's going to catapult things and move kids beyond being scared shitless of failure. Is that like that energy that they just perceive and they feel, right? They're like, I don't know what it is, but I'm inspired by how Katie missed the rope climb and then she came back and got it, right? Like, don't tell me that as a 12-year-old, you can't get inspired, or a 12-year-old can't be inspired by seeing someone do that, right?
That's like, what that's, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming back to that initial, like homework, I guess, of finding those stories and finding those narratives that kids can really like just digest and fall in love with, that isn't in a sporting context or isn't in a, you know, your typical like war or, but I guess it has to be polarizing in order to like really captivate someone, because it just gives them the framework to like imagine them in that situation and having to feel the struggle and the, you know, it didn't happen because you never went out into the world. It didn't happen because you, you know, sat at home and never tested it. It's like, that's the story, that you had to go out and face the dragon and slay the dragon. And, you know, yeah, you're not going to be the same person at the end of it. You're going to be a different, you know, person. You know, you'll have, there've been some good things and there'll have been some bad things, but that's ultimately moving you forward. And I think if we can find some of those narratives to even start that process in terms of a physical and movement setting, I think that's such a cool framework to then work through, you know, how you then teach progression and then how you create that love of learning. And then how, so, because then by the time they're, you know, instead of hopefully they're off TikTok and they're, you know, ChatGPTing about, you know, something else around whatever challenge that they're trying to, you know, pull me together all the top, you know, articles around this, and digesting content that's helping them and constructive, as opposed to just like numbing.
Yeah, ChatGPTing has become a verb now.
Yes.
Well, Google, it used to be search engine, now it's Googling, right? Just Google it, right? What the hell does that mean? Not to summarize or get close to our end here, but you know, because I try to keep going back to my own principles of something people could take from it, that it's the ideas and the thoughts, right? And these metaphorical practices that you and I go through that we all need to keep doing with our kids and our peers and our family members, our community, et cetera, as not only an example of tough conversations, but we'll come up with something creative that's helpful for that future, you know, and I won't just land on, you know, like I like to say, you know, we'll just lift rocks and walk. Well, what's something a little bit more than that, you know, to be reductionist, you know, teach your kids, you know, how to rock climb. You can go in an indoor gym and do it 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, learn how to mountain bike or learn how to bike, right? And inside of that, although people, you know, may bark at the like, oh, that's just so simple, spend a little time on the progressions and the challenges and the reasons why I picked those. Because the reason why I picked those is that there's an endless creativity. There's endless progression. Do you know what I'm saying? So inside of it, there could be something as simple as that. And of course,
I totally agree.
You can color it, right? You know, based upon what's in the school and the gymnasium setting that you and I talked about and built for 90 minutes, Monday to Friday, et cetera. But, you know, maybe you could just start with that, is falling in love with this, you know, as I like to say, do those things and don't tell anyone about it. And that's when you know you're doing it for the right reasons, right? Yeah. Just for the physical challenges.
I think the greatest gift is just opening up your child to the world in a way and expanding that horizon for them. And you could start with like, yeah, give them the tools to be competent in the elements.
Yeah.
On grass, on dirt, in water, you know, climbing you know, up a hill or a vertical. It's like
surfing in Long Island.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have to master it, but you've just opened their world to like, oh, okay, I've done this before. I know how to do this. And then they'll naturally gravitate towards something. And now you've cultivated a curiosity. And then it's like, yeah, teach them how to just be competent on some of the tools, like how to ride a bike. You've just opened up more of the world to them because instead of having to walk, they can ride and they can cover twice as much ground. And so I think that's such a great gift, even just as a starting point. You know, if they're confident in all elements, they know how to navigate it.
Yeah.
And now they can like, you know, jump on a bike or, you know, skateboard, or now you're probably going to find your kid spending 3 hours in the backyard trying to do a kickflip. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
I see that in New York City all the time. Like this young kid is just like trying to get this kickflip and he's just like, he's like, oh, he's smashing. Yeah.
I love it, man. I love it. I had, we could go sidewind, you know, on the puristic, you know, energy that's inside of that, where the kids are just doing it just for the sake of it. Right. You know, where I look around and see so many kids, you know, trying to get biofeedback on their fancy expensive watch of the calories they spent while they were out on an e-bike. Like this is 2023.
Yeah. But right? I mean, you can draw on experiences as an adult. Like when you've, you know, like I'll just use one, like even just moving to a new city and, you know, it being an intimidating place and then being like, oh, like, I don't want to ride a bike around here. And then it's like, oh, I'm kind of scared. And then I jump on a bike and you're like, oh my God, this has just unlocked the city.
Freedom.
It's like, exactly.
Freedom. And
it gives you confidence. You learn a whole lot about, you know, where you are geographically, how to navigate places, about the culture, about, you know, fun things that you might then want to go and do. Like, I never knew this was here. It's like, it just, even just by giving a child the tools to be able to like, give them a little bit more freedom, you know, in a way that's obviously safe and within their scope, you know, like in their zone of ability, then you've just unlocked, you know, their world map just got a little bit bigger and now they want to explore the edges of that and then boom, boom, boom. And if I think that's the key ingredients to develop that like curiosity and that love of learning, because they're going to want to go out and see like, oh, what could I find today?
Yeah. Yeah. That innate drive for creativity of their own physical challenges. Mm. Right. I think we segued there into probably the future episode on the public.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think we kind of cornered ourselves for good reason of like talking about this, of the Zach's Wonder School idea and how physical education fits into that in a public school or private school, charter school setting. But yeah, you are touching on things there that are near and dear to my heart of, you know, nature and doing stuff outside and physical expression in the natural environment, et cetera. I believe that is the tools, but you know, we'll get to it.
I mean, that could be a good place to wrap up to save it for the next episode, but I think, and would encourage, you know, parents, teachers, you know, parents, policymakers, professionals, like think about how this Socratic, you know, Wonder School could be applicable in a physical education and physical movement setting with those that you're working with. I really loved the, you know, I don't want to say the hero's journey, but again, just using story to help captivate young kids and to really find that sense of like what inspires them and what they're really curious about to help them frame where they want to take that physical expression, you know, whether it's a performance sporting session, area, whether it's a discovery, just self-discovery, or whether it's in like a more performative or creative expression. I think it's so important, like I said, to develop that love of learning and develop that curiosity that then puts the wind in their sails to want to get after something.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the carryover I got from this in my summary, without you asking, what I summarized from this was the differences in the cognitive classroom realm and the physical realm. And then in the physical realm, though, how it has to be collaborative with the cognitive realm and the classroom in order to make that dent and move it forward. And then it was happily reminded me of the individual capabilities that no one cares about but that witch, we have to inspire that kid to want to be a better version of themselves physically. Somehow we've got to like, we got to get them to love it for the sake of itself, not for anything else, you know, not for anything else. And that ties into what I also would summarize I liked in our conversation was us coming up with this, I guess, different language than the hero is to make them think that you need to figure out what your ideal version of yourself is, right? And what your ideal, and to use my language, maximal expression of yourself is. And then hopefully maybe the carryover from the collaborative Socratic stuff into the gym would be, you're going to start asking questions like, why am I doing this? What am I afraid of when I do this, right? Like all of the stuff that we do get from the cognitive realm, bring it into the physicality, and maybe that'll move it forward so that we can get these, you know, these deep rooted changes happening to young kids and middle school and high school, and to the ultimate utopic concept of fitness being no more and everyone being able to take care of themselves.
1 inch at a time.
1 inch.
Well, I'll signpost a couple of future episodes about, again, entering that public space and then coming up with some of our own stories that could be really powerful that aren't, you know, from a sporting context or a war context as well. I think right. That would be cool just to riff on that and just be able to use that as examples that might inspire young people as well.
And the AI.
And yep. And how AI fits into all of this as well.
Yeah. We'll listen to the audience on that one. We're still going to take it, but we'll listen to the audience if you want us to go on a specific route, because there are multiple routes we could take it.
Yeah, I'll put my email in the show notes as well. So if you have other ideas or topics you want us to hit on, then we can
DAN space AT space AT.
I'm just going to protect myself. They're listening, everyone. They're listening. Awesome. Well, thank you, James. Good to have you back. And yeah, we'll see everyone on the next episode.
Season two is underway. Thanks again, Daniel, for all your work in this. And likewise, I look forward to another awesome season coming up.
Sounds good.
Take care.